Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Ty Bannerman. The 2020 New Mexico legislative session finishes up today at noon. As those final hours close in, we are going to discuss where high-profile bills like the Red Flag Gun Law and the Opportunity Scholarship stand, as well as the fate of some important laws you may not have heard of, but that could have a big impact in our state. And we want to hear from you. What bills were you happy to see pass? Which stalled proposals frustrated you? Email letstalk@kunm.org, tweet using letstalknm, that's a hashtag, or give us a call at 277-KUNM, that's 277-5866, and we are also live streaming on our Facebook page. Now joining us in the studio, I'd like to welcome Gwyneth Doland of New Mexico PBS and Julianne Grimm, the editor-in-chief of the Santa Fe Reporter. Good morning and thanks for coming in.
We're happy to be here.
Good morning.
So there is so much going on right now, so much for us to talk about today. But let's start with some late night developments. I understand that there was a bit of a dust up about the budget. What happened there, Julie?
Well, I wasn't there, was already in bed, but luckily there were some journalists who were hard working at the Santa Fe New Mexican and Albuquerque Journal who saw it happen. Apparently there were two lawmakers who were face-to-face as they were having a little procedural kerfuffle, and a third lawmaker had to get in between them, and that happened sometime in the darkness last night. We don't see the final passage of this bill on the House floor until this morning. Actually, it happened around 1:15.
I see. So tensions are running high. What is going on with the budget? What is I understand it got revised.
It's difficult for everyone to answer that question. We have the Senate Finance Committee introduced a bunch of amendments, as they always do, to the House-approved version of the budget. And although the House did reach concurrence on all those amendments, you have to really get into the weeds to figure out what has changed at this point. It's a little too soon to tell. Gwyneth, yes?
You know, I think the big picture is that the Senate changed it, and the House, you know, we thought, oh, God, are they going to drag this out and try to negotiate on every little thing? That the pressure last night was to get all of this done in time. This is my 11th session, plus one where I worked in the Senate clerk's office in 2006. And I can tell you, everyone hates everyone. They hate their jobs. They hate their life. They do not want to stay any longer. They're exhausted. They're wasted, tired. They've been commuting, all this stuff. So last night, I think you saw people who were just tired and cranky and want to go home. So the House concurred. They were like, fine, Senate, fine, whatever. But not without some complaints from the Republicans, who are so far in the minority that they were probably not going to have the power to change anything. But they wanted to be at the table, and they were out of the room. And so they were complaining, hey, what did you just vote on this thing? It took 2 seconds, and we weren't even in here, some of them. So probably a legit complaint magnified by everyone's exhaustion.
Is this maybe a symptom of the 30-day session, just the intensity of trying to get so much done in that short amount of time?
Yeah, I mean, this is just kind of how it is if you don't have a full-time legislature. They got to cram a lot into the 30. They cram a lot into the 60. It's the same. There's almost always an all-nighter in there somewhere or close.
But there's also plenty of talking about your grandchildren and celebrating your win of the House-Senate basketball game and all kinds of other stuff that, you know, to the outside observer, seems like a waste of time.
But, you know, there's in their defense, there is a lot of time on the House floor or the Senate floor where they don't have anything to do, especially early in the session. There's no bills there yet, right? They're all still in committee. So they're like, well, it's Espanola Day.
Well, we had a reporter there at the Roundhouse yesterday who was waiting to watch the debate about one of the community solar bills. And she was texting me like, well, it's been 40 minutes. We're still on grandchildren. So they definitely had things to do yesterday.
And I'd imagine they have things to do today. There's 4 hours left. What are they expecting to get done in that amount of time?
Well, there are 59 items on the House calendar for today. Quite a big number on the Senate calendar, which was just published in the time since I took that note down. And really, it's anyone's guess which of those bills are going to make it through. You know, the House is going to reconvene at 8:30, mm-hmm. the Senate at 9 a.m., and they both have to stop by noon.
Right. Well, let's go ahead and take a look at some of the bills that that went through the session. Some of the more high-profile ones, like, say, the red flag gun law, or more properly, the extreme risk protection order, that passed as of February 13th, and I believe it's on its way to the governor's desk. It has not been signed. Is that correct?
Didn't she sign it?
Did she sign it?
I can't remember, but she's going to either way. Okay. I mean, she's a big supporter.
So can you refresh our memory, Gwyneth, on how this law will work?
Yeah, so... They debated it very deeply and they changed it a little bit. But essentially, a law enforcement officer or some school officials can and a couple other categories of folks can go and ask a judge and say, this person is an immediate danger to themselves or others. Because they've been talking about this, they've sent us these threats, all these kinds of things. And if the judge is persuaded that there is an immediate threat, then they can take, they can give an order to take the guns away for a short period of time, a number of days. The gun owner has the opportunity to come in and challenge that. They can, if it is found to be worthy by the judge, they can extend it for a period of time.
Now, as with anything firearm-related, this has been controversial. We've even had Republican members of the legislature holding up their constitution as they voted against it. Will this stand up to a constitutional challenge?
Well, I am a constitutional law expert. Not really. Well, a bunch of other states have these.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is not that different. So I would who knows what the Supreme Court would do, but we're not alone in this. We didn't invent this on our own. We're following other states in this kind of thing. So it's not super far out there.
Some New Mexico sheriffs are saying it's unenforceable. Why are they saying that?
By them.
By them?
Yeah. I mean, so this is a fight that has happened here and in a lot of other places where you find that rural officials are more conservative and their constituents are more conservative. And don't forget, the sheriffs are elected.
So you think maybe this is a willingness issue rather than an ability issue?
Well, you know, there are some issues. You know, I've done some reporting on this in the past, and sometimes law enforcement officers will say to you, we don't really want to go to this guy's house and ask him for the guns because we're persuaded he is a danger, right? So we're asking them to go into harm's way in order to accomplish this sometimes, right? But I think what we have is a political disagreement on the part of some elected law enforcement officials who disagree on the issue.
I see. So one of the other high-profile bills was the legalization of recreational cannabis. A lot of folks thought that that was going to actually happen this year. Governor Lujan Grisham certainly made it one of her priorities, but it wound up dying in committee. Julianne, what happened there?
Well, it died in committee, Ty. I mean, I think this is a prolonged effort on the part of folks who want to see cannabis legalization for adult use in New Mexico. There's a huge amount of public support for this. And I think that there's some question about like how high of a priority this really was for the administration. The governor definitely talked about it and appointed a task force with some high-profile folks who've been in the fight for this for quite a long time. But really, the legislation didn't change substantially from last year when it failed. The players on the key committees that caused obstruction of it or that, you know, stopped it from moving forward haven't changed. Their opinions haven't changed, and the composition of the committees haven't changed. So I think even though people wanted to be really optimistic about the passage of the thing, it wasn't really looking that great from the beginning.
Is that just a sign that legalizing cannabis isn't possible with the current legislative makeup?
No. I think that we've seen when there is the political will and there is the pressure for something to move forward, it can move forward very quickly. So, for example, there's a change to the law that was adopted by both houses and that the governor is going to sign that has to do with issuing medical cannabis licenses to folks who are not residents of mm-hmm. the state of New Mexico. And so There was a court challenge that some listeners may recall. One of the largest dispensaries in New Mexico sued the state over these regulations, and actually not as a dispensary, but the CEO of the dispensary as a patient was one of the plaintiffs in that case. And so they won that case at the district court level. The judge said that the law doesn't really permit the state to deny these out-of-state residence cards. And so between September and now, there have been 613 people who got cards to purchase medical cannabis in New Mexico and who don't live here. Mm-hmm. The governor doesn't like that. The Department of Health doesn't like that. And so they have now changed the statute so that instead of just saying we have to give a card to a qualified patient who is a person, it now says that that person must be a resident of the state.
So why was that such a priority?
I'm not sure why it was a priority, but why I bring it up is that it was a priority mm-hmm. and that the governor sent her chief counsel to the last committee hearing on it, which was Monday morning. That committee voted around 10:30 to do pass recommendation. And before, you know, the sun went down, the House had passed that legislation. So that happened very quickly. And, you know, this idea that, like, things can't happen quickly is a little bit of a false narrative, I think.
Timing is everything, right? So this is an election year, right?
Yeah.
And there is bipartisan support for legalization among, a sort of diverse number of Republicans who are on board with this. But when you look at those poll numbers, yes, a majority of New Mexicans want legalized cannabis, but not necessarily a majority of Republicans. So this is deeply unpopular with a number of constituents in Republican and conservative Democratic areas. And would you want to be like, woo, let's legalize marijuana? And then now you have a primary opponent in 5 minutes who's like, this guy loves drugs.
Well, do you think things might change enough over the next year for it to pass in 2021?
Well, the political climate will be different. So, mm-hmm. you know, timing, it'll be different next year.
So it may not be completely dead at this point.
Like, nothing is ever completely dead.
All right. We have a call from Isabella in Albuquerque. Good morning, Isabella. What would you like to add to the conversation, Isabella? Okay, we're having a little bit of a problem hearing you right now. We might try you again in a few minutes, but let's go ahead and go to Ray's. Good morning, Ray's. What is your comment or question today? Okay.
Hello.
Hi, Ray's. Are you there?
Yes. Good morning.
Great. What would you like to add to the conversation?
No, I just wanted to say I'm really disappointed on House Bill 302 that's stuck in the Judiciary Committee.
Okay, what is that one about?
Just to expand the statute of limitations on childhood claims and sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not, especially now with like the Archdiocese of Santa Fe, the mm-hmm. Boy Scouts of America, using the bankruptcy to get out of the, making restitution and stuff to these claimants. And also, they can't get medical treatment and stuff like that. And I think this bill would have helped.
Okay. We have a Jeff Proctor of New Mexico In Depth here. Did you want to add something there?
Sure. There's a distinction to draw on 302, and that's that there is no statute of limitations on the criminal side. That's where some of this debate has gotten hamstrung. What this would create would be a longer statute of limitations in civil court, which would allow people access to recover damages for childhood rapes and those kinds of things. But on the criminal side, these crimes are still prosecutable to the extent that there is prosecutorial will to proceed.
Okay. Well, this is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman, and we are taking a look at the end of the legislative session. We want to know what your take is on the bills that passed or failed. You can call us at 277-5866 and let us know. And we are going to take a quick break.
KUNM's spring fundraiser is right around the corner, and we are looking for businesses and individuals who can offer a challenge grant for the March fundraiser. When you offer to match the gifts of KUNM donors during the fundraiser, it really encourages listeners to donate and increases the amount of support for programming you love. So if you are planning to give $500 or more and would like to make it a challenge grant, please call 505-277-8006. That's 505-277-8006.
Croatia's top court slams foster parent bias, LGBTQ kids crave their history, and queer highlights tread Oscar's footlights. Those stories and more this week now that you've chosen This Way Out.
In most of the country, schools exclude LGBTQ history. We don't learn about the civil rights struggles that our people have engaged in.
That's This Way Out, Friday morning at 8:30, right here on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. We're talking about the end of the legislative session, and we are taking your calls. And Isabella from Albuquerque, we'd like to try you again there. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can indeed. So what is your comment or question this morning?
I just wanted to add to the conversation that I was disappointed that legislators didn't do more during this session to protect the rights of women and do anything to repeal the old abortion ban that's on the book that we tried to appeal last year.
Okay, Gwyneth, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I asked the Speaker of the House about this yesterday, and I said, you know, they didn't get to it this time, but my question was, if, say, Ruth Bader Ginsburg retires or dies, and there's, this immediate concern over the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, would you want a special session to call lawmakers back into Santa Fe to try to neutralize New Mexico's old law criminalizing abortion? And he said no. And he basically said that because they don't have the votes, right? They don't have the votes right now. He said what we would do is, you know, kind of hang tight for a little bit and work out another solution. But this has always been the problem for abortion rights advocates at the legislature, is that on the floor, they never had the votes. And Democrats who control the legislature have controlled this issue in committee. And so it is a very difficult strategic issue for them.
Okay, well, thanks for your call, Isabella. And we've got a listener question from Judy, who is wondering about the funding for the Albuquerque homeless shelter. Did that get the cut? I believe that was a $14 million ask. Does anyone know whether that went through the budget?
I do. Jeff? Yeah, so they got their public, the way the mayor has characterized this is that they asked for two gifts from the legislature. One was a large influx of funding for public safety. They got that. They did not get the $14 million they were hoping for to address chronic homelessness in the city. So that creates a little bit of a sticky wicket for the Keller administration at this point. When they asked local voters if they would be willing to up their taxes, the promise at that point was there was going to be a legislative match. There is not a legislative match. So the city is in a position now where they've got the money, their half of the money to address the issue, and no match from the state. So we'll see how that plays out.
Okay. And I have a call from Elizabeth in Albuquerque. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
What is your question today?
I'm wondering what happened to the bill that would have eliminated state tax on Social Security benefits.
Okay. Anyone have any thoughts on that one? Julie?
It didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
Yeah, there was, I think, significant resistance to that along the same lines that Gwyneth was talking about with respect to the budget. Republicans being really resistant to sort of changes that might affect revenue later on down the line. You know, the song and dances, what's going to happen when oil and gas revenues aren't providing such a big bag of money for us to spend?
But other Republicans supported this. And you know, that's a big part of some constituencies, in especially rural areas where the voters are older, and in parts of Albuquerque and places like that. I think that you identified the issue exactly, is like there is a policy disagreement about carving out all these little exemptions and leaving, you know, the state's income sheet looking like a Swiss cheese.
Was that a little bit of a surprise? I mean, I thought that there seemed to be a good degree of support for that going in, but it became pretty obvious pretty early that that Social Security income tax exemption was not going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I spend a lot of time talking to folks like Jason Harper, who's a Republican, who's one of their tax experts. I talked to him yesterday. You have to watch him. He's going to be on the show New Mexico in Focus Friday night, and he is just really charismatic in his explanation of these kinds of things. I didn't ask him about this issue, but folks like him often say this is just bad policy. This is a bad precedent to carve this out. What is, you know, so it is going to be it's politically touchy because it sounds mean, right?
And with an increase in the population of New Mexicans who are in the age bracket where this really, really matters, I think that moving into the future, the pressure for this exemption is going to still be there.
And the argument that it's double taxed is a good one. So there is a good policy debate.
Okay, and I have a call from Michelle in Albuquerque. Good morning, Michelle. What is your comment?
Hi. I was completely for the legalization of cannabis, and especially medical cannabis, and I was so happy that medical cannabis had become legalized. And then I ended up taking a trip to Colorado, Denver, and I had never seen a site like I had seen in Denver, even though I had been there earlier years. And there were hordes and hordes and hordes, literally hundreds of people homeless living on the sidewalk. And I knew in my previous visits to Denver, I had not seen such a thing. It looked like a third world country. I have always felt very charitable toward anyone on the street holding up a sign at the intersection. I always keep a juice box in my car to hand to them food. I've even made it, you know, I've even taken a food order, gotten a Burger King meal complete with the 6 packets of sugar that they asked me to stir into their coffee and hand delivered it to them. But when I went to Denver, up and down Colfax Street, which is a street that extends from Denver all the way to Aurora, it, you know, and even by the stadium, there were so many homeless people. I felt unsafe.
Okay, well, thank you for your call, Michelle. Julie, are we aware of any connection between legalization of cannabis and increase in homeless population? Is that...
I'm not.
Okay.
I've seen no data on that.
Okay, so We don't know that there is a connection there, but thank you for your call. Now I'd like to go ahead and bring Lissa Knudsen and Jeff Proctor into the conversation. Lissa is a reporter with the UNM Daily Lobo. Jeff writes for New Mexico In Depth and also the Santa Fe Reporter. So speaking of the governor's priorities, one of the initiatives that got a lot of national attention this year was a plan to provide tuition-free college to certain New Mexico residents. That became HB 14, the Opportunity Scholarship Act, and it's had some trouble and gone through some changes. Lissa, can you tell me about the journey HB 14 has had so far and where it stands now?
Sure. Well, as of yesterday, it was folded into House Bill 2, and that was voted on at early this morning, actually, at 1 a.m. And so we do know that $17 million for scholarships for free tuition and fees for students who are going to community colleges, two-year colleges, will be available. There's still some... It's not exactly like it was when it was originally proposed. So now it is a need-based scholarship. You have to apply for a FAFSA or the free federal aid and qualify, be income eligible. You have to be an adult or over 18 or eligible to be on the lottery scholarship. And you have to maintain at least a 2.5 GPA and be a full-time student in order to be eligible.
Now, what about students who, you know, drop out of high school and get their GED? Will they be included in this scholarship?
It's my understanding that that has not been included. It was a big debate, I think, on the floor yesterday when this was being debated, and that was one of the arguments that was made, is that those would be the most vulnerable students, and they would be the most to benefit from this. But as of right now, it's pared down. I mean, the original ask was for $45 million, and then it went down to 35, and then 26, and now it's 17. But there's also a $10 million boost to the lottery scholarship. Mm-hmm. So that was part of the compromise that came.
Now, how does the lottery scholarship work these days?
Again, that is available to anyone, but it's for students just as they come out of high school. They can't take time off. They have to go directly into college. They have to maintain a GPA. They have to stay full time. And once they lose it, they can't get it back.
So even though that this is kind of a more conservative version of the bill or the proposal that Governor Lujan Grisham originally proposed. I mean, is this a win for her administration?
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to ask me that question. I actually consider it a win. I think that it showed some good negotiation skills. I don't know if it's exactly by design that she asked for more and then compromised back down to this position, but you know, getting free community college for need-based, you know, students who have need, I think is a win, and I think it still puts us on the map nationally.
Okay, and Jeff, you've been covering parole and probation reforms, which are aimed at limiting the number of offenders who are sent back to jail for technical infractions. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, what kind of technical infractions are we talking about here?
Well, I mean, they're defined pretty narrowly and have been since this legislation began its process and debate kind of early last year. And so what you're really talking about are instances of like a failed first drug test. And more broadly, the larger category of technical violation is missing or being late to an appointment with a probation officer. So those are typically infractions that historically in New Mexico and right up to the present day and nationally have sent people back to jail. You get a violation and the probation officer revokes your probation and you're sent back to jail until the judge can sort it out. It's not a new crime. It's just simply a violation of the probation rules. So the intent of the reforms was to shift the focus of the state's probation and parole division and the few courts that have their own probation divisions, like Metro here in Albuquerque, from kind of a punitive system that's more of a carrot and stick based kind of thing to more of like a restorative idea for how probation and parole is supposed to function. Really, they wanted them focused on things that would reduce recidivism, keep people out of the system. And there are all kinds of studies that show that there's a magic number somewhere between 48 and 72 hours.
Within jail?
Yeah, if you spend that much time behind bars, especially if your life is already a little bit precarious, you start to lose a job, a minimum wage job. You start to be evicted from your housing. You start to lose your kids. All of the things that keep you incentivized to remain like a productive member of society. So that creates another cycle of recidivism and, you know, frankly, just screws people. So the idea was, let's take these things that aren't serious violations of someone's probation, like committing a new crime. Somebody goes and jacks a bank while they're on probation, probably ought to send them back to jail while we sort things out. The idea was to limit that and to scale back the sending of people to jail on these technical violations.
Now, much like the Opportunity Scholarship, this bill has gone through some transformations as it's made its way through the legislature. What's it looking like now compared to its original version?
Transformations would be a really kind word to describe the weaselry that's gone on with this bill. There has been – so what happened was it passed both chambers during last year's session and was then vetoed by the governor, who issued a message, a really kind of – unique and striking message saying, this is good law. I want this. It's worked in other states. But a group of prosecutors kind of led by Hector Balderas and a few others sort of mugged the governor after the session and sent this letter basically saying, you know, hide your wife, hide your kids. If the governor signs this, we're going to have blood in the streets. The crime problem is going to get worse. So she vetoed the bill and asked all the parties to get together in the interim and come up with a compromise. What that compromise ended up being was the lead sponsor on the bill, Representative Mo Maestas of Albuquerque, sort of ceding to the overwhelming majority of changes that the prosecutors wanted to make to the bill. That's what was introduced this year. And by the time it got to House Judiciary, the prosecutors were saying they haven't gone far enough to give power back to the probation officer to make sure people are going to jail when the prosecutors feel like they should. And it also upset the criminal defense bar and the public defender department who were saying, look, this was the idea behind this was restorative justice. And the way the bill looks to us now, you're creating a system where maybe more people are going to be going back to jail and prison for these violations. So as of 11 o'clock last night, the bill was still in the Senate Judiciary Committee. It's not my job to pronounce bills alive, dead, or mostly dead on the radio. You never know, right? 38 or 39 bills had passed both chambers as of last night. That number is expected to double by the time they gavel this thing into its merciful death at noon today. And this is a bill that could, you know, get the Miracle Max treatment and become a thing that goes to the governor's desk. She will sign it if it gets there, I think.
So this has changed enough from last year that it would pass, but it's kind of a more watered down version.
Yes.
If it gets to her desk.
As I said, there's been a lot of weaselry that changed the initial intent of the bill, I think most people would say.
I want to jump in. I just have an update on the red flag bill, the extreme risk protection order. The speaker texted me to say it is not yet signed. So thank you for that update, Mr. Okay. Speaker.
And we are taking your calls, especially if you're the speaker. Which bills do you feel didn't get enough attention this year? Now is your chance to tell us about it. Call 277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. We've got some more calls and comments here. I've got Cheryl, who emailed us at letstalk@kunm.org. She says, better the state to make money from marijuana sales than from destroying our enchanted land by fracking and oil extraction. Any thoughts on that panel? Gwyneth?
I always say I have an opinion on anything. You know, I'm just going to go back and say this is a 30-day session. It's supposed to be about the budget. They passed a budget. They are like, woo, we're good here. You know, that is the basic task that they have to accomplish here. I think they got a lot of other stuff done kind of surprisingly in this short session. But everybody knows it's a long game. There's next year. Things will come back. And there's plenty of time for that.
Okay, so let's go ahead and dive a little deeper into the session, see what else was going on beyond red flag laws and cannabis legalization. Let's start with PARA reform. So PARA is the Public Employees Retirement Association, which manages the state's pension system. SB 72, titled PARA Solvency, cleared the House this week and is, I believe, headed to the governor's desk. Gwyneth Doland, could you refresh our memories? What is going on with PARA that needed reform?
Well, here in New Mexico, as in many other states, we are having trouble with our public pensions because they were designed to help people out with a percentage of their salary for a few years after they retire. Mm-hmm. And now people are living much, much longer, and that's a lot more money than they were set up to provide. So the Public Employees Retirement Fund is $7 billion in the hole. They have to fix it. Everybody knew they had to fix it. They had to find the money somehow. They came to a compromise where they're going to ask employees, not all, they exempted some public safety folks and stuff, but they're going to ask them to contribute, I think, half a percentage more. The state employers are going to contribute half a percentage more for a few years to kind of build it up a little bit. They're going to pause the cost of living adjustment, we call the COLA. And then they're going to change the way the cost of living adjustment has been calculated.
Now, that has a lot to do with why PARA is in debt in the first place, was the way that the COLA was calculated. Is that right?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, that could be one of them, but it's probably not as big as the fact that people live 30 years after retirement, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the cost of living has been paying people to account for inflation, right? Like, hey, you're retired. We're going to bump it up a little bit to account for inflation, but they've been paying more than the rate of inflation. And so current employees said, you know, they're kind of these retirees are getting a raise every year and we're not. Right. Mm-hmm. So now they're going to tie that adjustment to the performance of the investments. So if the fund is doing well and it's making more money, the cost of living adjustment will go up. If it's not doing that well, it'll go down. You know, this is kind of witchcraft math, but it's probably not going to be too far off from where it is.
Okay. It's worth maybe throwing in there, too, that the executive director of the PARA was giving a presentation in another committee, which I happened to catch, and talked about that, you know, when PARA was established, it's the contributions that were, you know, the percentages, the employees and the employers would pay were never really structured in a way that would like keep this ship sailing in the right direction. So that's kind of another factor here.
Now, you are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. What is on your mind as the 2020 legislative session comes to an end? Are you happy with how the session turned out? Or do you think that legislators could have or should have done more to address issues in our state? Tweet to us using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM or email letstalk@kunm.org. We'll be back in a moment.
When he was a kid, Max Offerkoek took piano lessons, but he didn't like piano, so he changed to violin, and then clarinet with an ulterior motive.
I wanted to join the middle school band because it would allow me to get out of P.E. class. And I
you didn't want to go to P.E.?
Didn't want to go to P.E. class.
Our young artist in residence, Max Offerkoek, on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This edition of AR features Michael Lerner on Faith, Politics, and the Left, part one of a special two-part program.
Almost universal in major parts of the left, the feeling that we give them is that if you're religious or you're spiritual, then you are probably at a lower level of intellectual and spiritual and psychological development.
That's Alternative Radio, Saturday night at 6 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. Alyssa, I understand you had something to add about the discussion of the pension reform?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that our editorial staff at the Daily Lobo, when we were talking about which bills to cover and for the legislature, we all just sort of looked at each other, and the millennials and Zoomers were like, we're never going to have a pension. Like, it just doesn't exist for us.
Well, do we have something for you? The legislature passed the NM Work and Save Act, which establishes a public retirement savings plan for self-employed people, people who work at nonprofits, and anyone else who doesn't have a retirement plan at work. It's going to be online. It's voluntary. You can sign up. The idea is to get people saving no matter what, because no one, not me, probably no one at this table, is saving enough for retirement.
And what is saving, Gwyneth?
Well, it's something rich people do.
So how will this work? This is like a special account that you can put money into on a voluntary basis?
Or? People will be mad probably if I say it like this, but it's kind of like a 401k that you can join. And it'll be just like a publicly available pool. You'll all be in the same thing. Small companies can join it too.
This is one of the other things that Think New Mexico is pushing in this session. So they lost on the Social Security income tax exemption, but they got this thing through, or you know, they supported this thing, which also got through, however you want to say that.
And I have a call from Jason in Albuquerque. Good morning, Jason. What would you like to ask us today?
Well, I wanted to address one piece of legislation that didn't even get a chance this session, and that was Senate Bill 276, medical cannabis in schools, and this was a bill carried by Senator Ortiz Epino and Senator Sedilla Lopez to address and fix the current problem with last year's legislation.
What was the problem with last year's legislation?
What had happened is once we passed the medical cannabis in schools bill last year, it went through a process with the PED to create the rules and regulations around it. When they did so, they put out an advisory to all the school districts, which resulted in all of the school districts requiring the parents to have to come to school to give the medical cannabis products to the kids, and then they were not allowing them to store the medicine at school like all the other people can who provide medication there. So that violated the reasonable accommodation part of the medical cannabis in schools law.
So, Julie, Gwyneth, why do you think that this didn't even get addressed this session?
Well, it's a 30-day. It's a budget session. There are a lot of great ideas whose time has come that just don't happen in a 30-day session for a variety of reasons. I will say that I've done a little bit of reporting on this, and it makes it really hard for parents to work if they have to go to their school twice a day and wait for the kid to come out and do all this stuff. It is a really difficult thing for parents. And a lot of these children are epileptic, and they've already, you know, they're already challenging for parents. So this is, it's super difficult.
Now, another topic that was on a lot of people's minds this year was vaping and tobacco issues. Lissa, I understand that you were covering that. What's going on in the legislative session dealing with those things?
So it looks like the Senate Bill 131 passed the Senate, and then it also passed the House of Representatives about 10:30 on the 18th, just a couple days ago. And so that's headed to the governor's desk for signature. You know, this was a compromise bill. I think that the public health folks and the vaping industry are behind the idea of licensure, and that's what got through. It does also raise the age to 21 to comply with the federal law. You know, which in some ways is just a little redundant at this point, but other people have argued that that also means that we're not blocking our access to federal grants because we are in compliance. It didn't repeal the existing preemption, and that was a big loss, I think.
So what is that exactly?
So the public health advocates wanted to follow Colorado, which they were recently able to repeal preemption. And preemption means that cities and counties and local municipalities have the authority to pass laws that are maybe more stringent than the state law. And unfortunately, the public health folks lost that, and they weren't able to necessarily get that through this year.
So that would mean, like, if Albuquerque or Bernalillo County wanted to raise the age of ability to vape to 22,
right,
they could.
A more, like, maybe relevant example would be they didn't include banning flavors in this mm-hmm. particular bill. And that would be very controversial. It makes up 80% of the market for vaping. But it is also the most tightly connected to youth using, getting hooked on mm-hmm. nicotine and using vape pens and things like that. So that would have allowed different smaller communities to have more stringent regulations.
Okay, and I have a call from Stephanie. Good morning, Stephanie. What would you like to add to the conversation?
Hello.
Hi, Stephanie. We are on the air. What would you like to say?
So my name is Stephanie Garcia Richard. I'm the state land commissioner. It's a constitutionally appointed elected office, statewide elected office, that has oversight on 13 million acres of state land. And I wanted to just, in the vein of a good idea whose time has come and looming financial crisis that the 30-day session failed to address, I just wanted to talk about the bonding capacity we have in our state for all the oil and gas infrastructure that will have to eventually one day be removed.
Okay. Well, any thoughts on that, panel?
Well, tell us, Commissioner, thank you for calling in. Tell us, you know, for people who are not familiar with this, we have a lot of infrastructure. You mean derricks and other, you know, kind of pieces of equipment and buildings and things like that that have been installed. And you think the state needs to be able to get more money to get rid of it? I mean, I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And so other states actually are jumping on this bandwagon now, sort of in advance of, you know, anticipating the next bust in the oil and gas industry and not wanting to be left holding the bag for the cost of all of the infrastructure that you just mentioned. So, yeah, wells, pipes, compressors, you know, all kinds of infrastructure that goes along with oil and gas development. And right now, we feel that there is inadequacy in the amount of bonds that we are able to have companies put up on this infrastructure. And so if the bottom goes out of that industry, New Mexicans will be left holding the financial liability for those pieces of infrastructure. So we asked the House to take up a statewide adequacy study. It's in the form of a memorial. That actually did pass out of the Energy Committee, but it languishes now on the House floor, and the Speaker has not called it up for a hearing.
So do we expect that next year you'll come back to the legislature and ask them to pass a law making sure that oil and gas companies put up enough money to make sure they can cover the cost of that removal?
So just to be clear, we're kind of running out of time. The state land office will proceed with our own bonding on state land, but that leaves out large swaths of, you know, private land and other state agencies that cover bonding as well. So we absolutely think it's going to be too late, but we will continue to try and push the state in the right direction.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Commissioner Garcia. So we are taking your calls today. We're talking about the state legislative session and how it's wrapping up today. And I'd like to get Khalil Ekulona on the phone. Good morning, Khalil.
Hey, what's happening?
So you are, of course, the host of KUNM's own YourNMGov podcast, and it's our own, but of course we're doing it in partnership with Santa Fe Reporter and others. Can you tell me about your first year covering the legislative session? What was that experience like for you?
It was very interesting. As I've lived in New Mexico for about 10 years, but I never really paid that much attention to state politics. I was always more of a, hey, I'll pay attention to national politics type of thing. So it was an opportunity for me to learn about the state, to see why certain things get done and why certain things don't happen. So it was really wonderful. It was like fun working with Gwyneth and Julianne and Matt and everybody from the Santa Fe Reporter to New Mexico PBS to our own folks here at KUNM. It was a really good time. Everybody was very knowledgeable about it, but I understood one thing, and this is just me.
Okay. Well, what do you mean?
A 30-day and 60-day session is not enough time to take care of all the problems New Mexico has.
Now, this is a sentiment I am hearing a lot of today and just in life.
I'll make the opposite argument.
Okay. Gwyneth, what's your take?
The more time they're there, the more they'll do. And I think...
And you see that as potentially a bad thing.
One thing I will say I've observed about this legislature is it is not whimsical. Things take a long time to happen, and that's excruciatingly frustrating for the folks who are working on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of times what we see happen is, because it has to spend so much time working through the session, going through these committees, going through the interim, by the time things pass, there is more support. They've been worked on more. We see in neighboring states things kind of woo flying around like crazy. And that does not happen here. This is a cautious legislature. It moves slowly.
We're the tortoise in the race here, and slow and steady getting things done.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, look at what other states pass and ask yourself, do you want our lawmakers in in Santa Fe longer?
Okay. And Julie, what's
your... I just think it's also, you know, everyone on this panel today is a journalist, and we work on deadline, and we all know that you spend as much time as you have to get as much done as you can before your deadline is there. And I think that we see that with the legislature, that, you know, you give them 30 days to pass laws, they're going to take 30 days to pass the laws. You give them 60, they're going to take 60. You give them 90, you know, do the math. I'm not sure that really the length of the session is what we need. I think that this question of whether we need to pay our legislators is kind of the bigger question about how do we make our lawmaking more efficient and effective.
Okay. Are there any are you aware of any calls to change the system from the 30-60-day sessions? No. Okay. It's something that we all like to complain about, but certainly condone.
Well, they are citizen lawmakers, and it's a hell of a long time to be away from your family and your job and your real life. It is difficult.
Okay. And Khalil, I'd like to go back to you. What bills did you learn about this session that you think more people needed to know about?
I thought, well, everybody talked about cannabis and guns. It was like weed and guns everywhere. I went on the streets and people would come up to me and approach me.
Well, that's Albuquerque.
It is. I thought the Joint Resolution 7, what we were just talking about, turning it over from a citizen-run legislature to professional legislature, I think by doing that, you open up the base of people who would run for office. You would have more people representing the people of the state than just this certain group. Now, I'm assuming this because, I've only begun to pay attention to state politics, but it feels to me like there's a certain class of people who run for office and become state legislators out here, a certain class of people. And the way the system is set up, by making it citizen-run, by getting a per diem, someone who has brilliant ideas but happens not to make a lot of money, they cannot physically and financially and realistically afford to be away for 30 or 60 days from their job. And that is not something where it opens it up. How would anyone feel that their voice is heard, that the state has their interest in mind, when it's only a particularly certain class of people who run for office? So I think should they pay attention? I don't know. I don't know what happened with that joint resolution, but if they move to eventually have
a professional
legislature, I think you might see some change here. But I'm not from New Mexico. I said it all the time. But New Mexico has such an opportunity to be a beacon for the country and progressive. And I don't mean politically progressive, but I mean progressive as far as having solar power basically everywhere. It has an opportunity to be a beacon for the country to say, hey, these are some brand new ideas that we're doing here in New Mexico that will work for everybody. But I just see that it's only a certain class of people. Folks with money have the opportunity to run. And that's what Washington, D.C. looks like. And we're not very happy with that. I'm not saying that people aren't pleased with their representatives here in New Mexico. I just think it would behoove the state to widen the pool of people who run for office.
Okay, let me put this to Jeff Proctor of New Mexico in Focus and, I'm sorry, New Mexico in Depth. And the Santa Fe Reporter, Jeff,
New Mexico, and something.
Yes.
To Khalil's point, it's a reasonable argument and an argument that the citizen-run legislature does kind of class some people out of running. The unsecret secret about the citizen legislature, though, is the rolling conflict of interest that exists in our state legislature. The question isn't just about should we pay these people because they work hard and because they go and make the sausage for our state. The issue that's created in a citizen legislature is all these folks have day jobs. They're lawyers, they're ranchers, they work in the oil and gas industry. They vote on bills that impact their own business. So that creates, there was a story in the New Mexican, somebody does the story every year. Usually two or three people do the story every year, where the way things work in Santa Fe, because of the nature of the citizen legislature, is you have these folks whose own interests, financial interests and other interests, are on the table when they cast votes on particular bills. So one argument is that ending the citizen legislature concept and creating a professionalized legislature would end in fewer conflicts of interest. There's no way you're going to eliminate all of that. I just thought that was worth mentioning in the context of the debate around should we continue to have an unpaid legislature or pay folks.
Julie, Gwyneth?
I want to say that to Khalil's point, these people, most of them are not rich at all in New Mexico in our legislature. They really are teachers and peanut farmers and real estate agents and stuff like that. They are a lot more like you and me than in folks in Congress, for sure.
Yeah, I was just going to chime in with that I was noticing during all the committee hearings when the legislators would speak, and some of them surprised me with what they had to say, like, I was a nurse and this is my question, or I have a small convenience store in Magdalena and this is my question. And so I do hear some of those surprising stories about just how real those people are.
Zach Cook, I think, owns a grocery store.
Yes.
Yeah. And was talking about this tobacco bill. Like, is this going to make this harder for me to? I mean, that's what these folks are like.
Yeah, I did a quick Google search on this really fast, and it shows that we have 35% to 50% of our state legislature are women, which is among the best across the nation.
Okay, and that is all the time that we have for today. Thanks to everyone who called in to share your thoughts. Thanks so much to our guests, Gwyneth Doland, Lissa Knudsen, Julie Ann Grimm, Jeff Proctor, and Khalil Ekulona. Let's keep the conversation going. You can share your thoughts on Twitter, #LetsTalkNM. On Facebook, you can just search for KUNM Radio or email letstalk@KUNM.org. If you missed part of the show, you can stream it online or subscribe to our podcast, which you can find wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'm Ty Bannerman. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Taylor Velasquez screened your calls, Bryce Dix live tweeted, and Kevin McDonald, our media partner in MPBS, live streamed the show today. Our producer is Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.